ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्णा। Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, entitled Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. Text number 20. Vishwamatmagadam Vyanjan Kudastho Jagadanguraha स्वचेत स्वतेजसा विपत्तिव्रम आत्म प्रस्वापनं तमः विश्वमात्मगतं व्यञ्जन कूटस्थो जगदंकुरः स्वतेजसा विपत्तिव्रम आत्म प्रस्वापनं तमः विश्वमात्मगदं व्यञ्जन कूटस्थो जगतं कुरः स्वतेजसा पिबत्तीव्रम् आत्म प्रस्वापनं तमः। Word to word translation. Vishwam, the universe. Atmagatam, contained within itself. Vyanjan, manifesting. Kudastaha, unchangeable. Jagat Anguraha, the root of all cosmic manifestations. Svatejasa, by its own effulgence. Apipat, swallowed. Tivram, dense. Atma praswapanam, which had covered the mahatattva. Tamaha, darkness. Translation: thus, after manifesting variegatedness, the effulgent mahatattva, which contains all the universes within itself, which is the root of all cosmic manifestations, and which is not destroyed at the time of annihilation, swallows the darkness that covered the effulgence at the time of dissolution. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ever existing, all blissful and full of knowledge, His different energies are also ever existing in the dormant stage. Thus, when the Mahatattva was created, it manifested the material ego and swallowed up the darkness which covered the cosmic manifestation at the time of dissolution. The idea can be further explained. A person at night remains inactive, covered by the darkness of night. But when he is awakened in the morning, the covering of night or the forgetfulness of the sleeping state disappears. Similarly, when the Mahatattva appears after the night of dissolution, the effulgence is manifested to exhibit the variegatedness of this material world. ॐ ज्ञानतिम्रान्तस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं
ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണപാദാൻ സഹഗണലളിതാ ശ്രീ വിശാഖാന്യതാംശ്ച ഹേ കൃഷ്ണ കരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗത്പതേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാ കാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ തപ്ത കാഞ്ചന ഗോരാംഗീ രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുതേ ദേവീ പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ വാഞ്ചകൽപതരുഭ്യഃ കൃപാസിന്ധുഭ്യേവ ച പതിതാനാം പാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ ജയ ശ്രീ കൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാ ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ ഭൂതൈർമഹാദ്ഭിർയൈമാ പുരോ വിഭു നിർമായ ശേതേ യദമൂഷ പുരുഷ ഭുങ്ക്തേ ഗുണാൻ ഷോഡശ ഷോഡശാത്മക സോലങ്കൃഷീഷ്ട ഭഗവാൻ വചാംസി മേ.
ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ. So we are amidst the creation of the material universe, and as we progress in the description of creation, we understand how much the process of creation is complicated and is technical. So today we will try to see the importance of creation in the context of Srimad Bhagavatam. And also we will try to understand the importance of Bhagavatam in the context of the whole Vedic literature. So we can see the entire thing in the right perspective. Generally, when we talk about Vedas, there is Vedas or the Vedic mantras which are manifested in the earthly realm, and also that which is manifested beyond the earth. So, for example, Rigveda, currently 10,500 mantras are available. And if you consider all Vedic literature together at this point in time, I'm talking just about the Rig, Sama, Yajur and Atharva Vedas, it may be close to 20,000 verses or around that. So it may look like the Vedas are very small in terms of the content, in terms of the number of verses. Whereas when you see itihasas like Mahabharat, you know, 100,000 verses are there. So it can definitely look having a large volume. Now, when you try to understand this Vedic literature and Vedas in itself, what is available as Vedas, it is only a portion of the total Vedas. So it is not the complete Veda. The complete Veda is not available on the earthly realm. It's not there. So the purpose of Veda Vyas, who is Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa, was to condense and to edit and to divide the entire Vedic literature so that something which is tangible could be presented for this world. So usually when we speak to people, people come to us and ask, do you have Vedas? Have you studied Vedas? So we want to study Vedas. The real meaning of the Vedic literature, you have to just study Vedas. This is the normal understanding. However, our acharyas question this notion, and they bring forth the importance of all the Puranas and especially Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, if you try to look upon all Vedic literature, even if you consider the Vedic literature in itself, which is available currently to the human society, that in itself is too voluminous. It is too much for comprehension. One, because of the content, And also because of the statements which are apparently contradictory. So one thing is one has to reconcile the contradictions and has to come to the right conclusions, which is challenging. And when you talk about Puranas, there are 400,000 verses in Puranas in total. So it is quite a bit. It is not so easy. Now, there is so much of the so-called division of Vedas, and there are Puranas, there are Itihasas like Mahabharata, 100,000 verses. So how can we come to the right conclusion, and how can we come to the right meanings of them? Because the presentation in itself has contradictions implicitly. So one point one could ask, why there are contradictions? So in Srimad Bhagavatam in itself, in the 11th canto, Krishna speaks to Uddhava. Krishna tells Uddhava that Paroksha Vadayo Muneha Paroksham Cha Mama Priyam. He says, generally sages like indirect sayings. They don't want to say things directly. They present the concepts in an indirect fashion. That is Parokshavad. Pratyaksha means direct, right? And Paroksha means indirect. And the Lord says, Paroksham Mama Cha Priyam. And I like that kind of a saying. I like when the sages tell about me and about the absolute truth in an indirect fashion. I like it. Why? Because according to one's consciousness, according to one's level of bhakti, one can decipher the statements of the sages. So that's why even Bhagavad Gita is considered Rajaguhya. It is secret. Because if you don't have the right mentality, one cannot understand. So one point, the statement in itself are contradictory and the Lord likes it. And the sheer volume of the literature can become challenging. And third, the people in the age of Kali are thoroughly unqualified. Recently, I was distributing books with a book table, and I saw two ladies coming. They were yogis. They said, we know all these books. We know about it. We know who you guys are, and we know about all of this. All right, I said, then, okay, we have a new book. So I showed them Journey Home, because they have seen other books. So Journey Home. So I said, you know, this is the journey of a Swami from America. You know, he traveled all the way from America to Europe. Then overland, he traveled from Europe to India. You know, you can see I showed, flipped the pictures through. He said, yeah, that's fine. Then when it came to one picture, they became completely excited. They became, Guruji. Okay. So I said, oh, okay, who is that? That was the Iyengar, the founder of the Iyengar Yoga. BKS Iyengar, very famous person. So they were his disciples. So it's fine. I said, okay, it's nice. So they browsed through. After that, they left it there. They didn't pick it up. I said, we have Bhagavad Gita, the complete edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Just browse through. Give them the Bhagavad Gita. They started browsing through. They were talking amongst themselves. They said, this is too heavy duty. This is heavy duty. It's too much. Seeing Bhagavad Gita, their conclusion is heavy duty. It's too much. They just left it. That we will come back later. So I was thinking, what is the condition of the human beings at this point in time? Even a copy of Bhagavad Gita, they don't have the patience to read and understand. Right? Many people openly say, if you do book distribution, they say, we are not going to read this book. This is a big book. It's too big for us to read. So for us to consider reading something, we need really small, like a pamphlet. We do have small books for them. But this is the reality. But we don't have to taken aback because of that. Because for many people, if you ask many devotees, the first big book they have read in their life is Bhagavad Gita. Many people, reading started after coming in touch with the devotees. So that is fine. So those who haven't read any books, they said this is the Bhagavad Gita, the first book that they have read. It's a fact. And many of them, they have completed the entire Srimad Bhagavatam also, to their credit. So this is wonderful. So this is the plight of people in the age of Kali. They don't have the patience or determination to read a book like Bhagavad Gita. And many of them do need help to read Bhagavad Gita and to give some understanding. Back in the days, people used to read Bhagavad Gita and they became devotees straight away. Right? In 70s and 80s, people used to read Bhagavad Gita, straight away they became devotees. But as the age progresses, we don't see that. People even need help to read and understand Bhagavad Gita. Even though Bhagavad Gita is not such a big book in terms of volume, you know, 700 verses, maybe 700, 750 pages. You know, if you read a couple of hours a day, then it's a matter of, you know, 2 weeks maximum to read cover to cover Bhagavad Gita. Still, that in itself becomes so difficult for the people. So now, we are in this condition, and what to speak about reading the entire Vedic literature, all the Vedas, all the Puranas, Itihasas, reading them and coming to the right conclusions. It is impossible. It's not going to happen. And when, if you look from, so no, point number one, from a perspective of normal people, the whole entire Vedic literature is inaccessible. As simple as that. Then if you consider the perspective of scholars, even the scholars and the so-called Indologists, they are also taken aback because of the Vedic literature. There are many who have become big scholars in Rigveda and few other Vedic literature, which are short. But when it comes to the entire Puranas, even the scholars, they also give up. Because 400,000 verses, how are they going to study and how are they going to reconcile the whole thing? So many of them, or most of them, have given up because it is not possible to come to any conclusion. And then if you see the research in itself, it is very narrow. Let it be material, or when they apply the same principle, if they want to study some of the Vedic literature, the study is very narrow. Even if you take one field, even if you take one field of engineering, for example, there'll be, you know, 15 or 20 sub-branches minimum, sub-branches in which one is researching. So one person will be focusing on only in one area. And the entire life, maybe 30 years, will spend on one area. It's so narrow. So the human capacity is so limited. So even when you understand studying a particular field, it goes very narrow. They want to go deep, but very narrow. So when it comes to the same principle in the context of Vedas, how is it possible to understand broadly and deeply? Both are difficult. Deeply, it's impossible because the minds are limited and it is contaminated. Then broadly, it is difficult because the intelligence is limited and the time is limited. So if you consider all this perspective, it is impossible to get a real access to the Vedic literature from a scholastic perspective or a layman perspective. It remains impossible and it remains inaccessible. So now, when we talk about Srimad Bhagavatam, we know why Bhagavatam is important. Because one explanation, as we know, is Vyasadev compiled all the Puranas and then he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam because he was instructed by Narada, because in all the Puranas, he didn't exclusively glorify Krishna. So to exclusively glorify Krishna, he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a natural commentary to Vedanta Sutra. So then we can understand the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. At the same time, from a Western scholarly perspective, they do say that some part of the Vedas, they are eternal, or no, they never use the word eternal, but they came about first, then the later parts and many of the Upanishads which came about later. It is written by different scholars or different sages and they added into the original literature. And Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also wrote by someone else and added to the entire literature. However, our understanding, the understanding of Acharyas, is completely different. They give the origin of Vedas as eternal because it is eternal with the Lord. It is co-eternal. Vedas are co-eternal with the Lord. Bhagavatam in the sixth canto, it is mentioned that, very clearly mentioned that it is not created by the Lord. Vedas are not created by Krishna. It is co-eternal. As far as Krishna is present, then Vedas are also present. It's not created at one point. It is there always along with the Lord. So same with the living entities. The Lord is there always. Similarly, we are also there. So this is the position of the Vedic literature. And there are millions of verses in Vedic literature. And only some of them are revealed to the earthly realm. Now, second point is that the same principle is applicable to Puranas also. Puranas have millions of verses which are available in the heavenly planet. You consider Mahabharata, you consider other Puranas. Everything has millions of verses. We don't know how many verses they have. It is much more elaborative and descriptive. And the demigods, they have access to all these Puranas. Whereas for the humans, whatever is revealed, that's all present. So in that respect, the Bhagavatam contains the essence of all the Vedic literature. All the essence. Because it is said, Purana means Puran. You know the meaning of Puran? Not Purna, Puran. To complete. Not Purna. Purna means, Purna is complete, of course. But Puran, it's verb. Puran means to complete. So Purana is coming from the word. One is Purana, the meaning of Purana is that it is old. Right, because Purana means old, because it contains the information which is pretty old. But at the same time, it is Puran, it completes, because Purana completes the Vedas. So even though the Vedas are divided, one Yajurveda was there, and it has been divided into four, it is just a division, and part of that is Purana, part of that is Srimad Bhagavatam. So without understanding Purana, the Vedic study is not complete. And we cannot understand also Vedas without understanding Purana. That's why Vyasadeva, we can see in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, Vedantakrit Vedavit Evachaham. Vedasya Sarved Ahameva Vedyo Vedantakrit Vedavit Evachaham. Krishna only wrote Veda, and Vedantakrit is also Krishna. And interestingly, in this Kali Yuga, this Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasadeva, he is a direct incarnation of Krishna. He is not a Shaktiyavesh, he is not an empowered representative. Rather, he is an incarnation of Krishna, an expansion of Krishna, who came to write this Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. Because in the previous Yuga cycle, Vyasadeva's father, Parashramani Vyasadevyasa, Parashramani Vyasadeva in the previous age, and he also divided Vedas, he also compiled Puranas. But it is said that the work of Vyasadeva, the current Vyasadeva, is even glorified much more than his father and his predecessors. The reason is he himself is the Supreme Lord. So it is so the available knowledge currently is very special because of the author being the Supreme Lord himself. So this is the context in which Srimad Bhagavatam is present. And what is the speciality of this creation is that we can understand from different points, but the main one is that in any Mahapurana there has to be description of creation. So, we know the 10 subject matters of creation, like sarga, visarga, atha sarga cha visarga cha sthanam poshanam mutaya manvantara ishani katha nirodho mukti rashraya. These are the 10 subjects of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10 themes. So to have a Purana, you cannot write anything. Purana means, history, we can write any history. That is not Purana. Purana means it has to have, these 10 themes have to be addressed. And the first theme is Sarga, creation. So that is given here in this chapter. Sarga is given. Partly in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the third canto of Bhagavatam, in the beginning chapters. And towards the end of the third canto. So here we have the creation. So this is part of Sarga, and the Visarga continues. So even though many Puranas also have these points, Sarga, Visarga, all the 10 subjects, many Puranas have all the 10 subjects that we have discussed. That is Sarga, creation, for primary creation, secondary creation, planetary system, Krishna's protection, Manvantaras, even Ashraya, that is the Samam Bonam, the ultimate shelter, dissolution, liberation, everything is there in some other Puranas also. However, the difference is that Bhagavatam very elaborately presents the ashraya or the final shelter, which is none other than Krishna. So I was reading Tattva Sandarbha, and there is a presentation where defining what is ashraya. There is a philosophical analysis giving why ashraya is Krishna. Ashraya means the ultimate shelter. So he analyzes whether the material nature can be the ultimate shelter. Then comes to the conclusion, no, material nature cannot be the ultimate shelter because that cannot exist in itself. Second, can the jiva be the ultimate shelter? No, because we are now itself, we are dependent on many other factors. One is Krishna and also on the material nature. Can we eat without the material nature? No. Can we fulfill our desires without the material nature? No. That's the problem with the ghosts, right? Ghosts, they have the desire, but they don't have the gross body to experience. They don't have gross body to enjoy. So they try to disturb others. So that is ghostly existence. So we need a gross body to enjoy. So we are dependent on the material nature. And finally, the final shelter is the Supreme Lord. Correct? So the shelter for everything is Krishna, and he himself is his own shelter. So in that way, Jiva Goswami says, ultimate shelter has to be Krishna. So I was thinking, first I thought, why such a philosophical analysis is required to present this? And we can understand Krishna is the ultimate shelter, but why it is required to analyze in this way? Because the three truths are there. One is the material energy is a truth. The Supreme Lord is a truth. Even the Jiva is a truth. So why you need to give such an analysis? Then I started thinking. Then a conversation came to my mind with one of my cousins. So he's a Bhagavatam reciter. And they're all with Bhagavatam, you know. They thoroughly know Bhagavatam in and out in terms of its content. Don't know the right purport or not, but they know Bhagavatam in their respects. So he started telling that the shelter, the ashraya of Srimad Bhagavatam is the 12th canto. I was thinking, how is it possible? You know, 12th canto deals with the dissolution, correct? So he started, all of them, it's not one person, all of them, you know, thousands of people who study Bhagavatam, they study in this way. That is, from 3rd canto onwards, they count the subjects of Bhagavatam sequentially. So 3, 4, 5, 6, etc. Then in the sequence, the final one is ashraya, and it has to be the 12th canto. And Jiva Goswami very clearly mentions in the Sandarbha that one shouldn't count in this way. He says that it is thoroughly wrong to count in this way. And he gives which canto has different topics. He says, we cannot assign one canto for one topic. Say, for example, the 3rd canto. 3rd canto has creation, but we cannot say that 3rd canto only has creation. It has Krishna's pastime. Right? 3rd canto beginning, we can see Krishna's pastimes within Vrindavan and outside of Vrindavan. So we cannot say this is just talking about creation. There can be some subjects which are prominent in certain cantos, but we cannot say that that is exclusive. So that is one point. Second, when it comes to ashraya, then I understood these people are confused. Even though it is given such a 90 chapters on ashraya, and even in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, why Vyasadeva wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, and he himself says, Puranam Brahma Samhitam. This is the essence of all Vedic literature. And also, Lokasya Ajanata Vidwan Chakra Sastra Samhitam. Because Bhakti Yogam Adhokshaje. To exactly teach Bhakti Yogam Adhokshaje. Teach Bhakti Yoga unto Krishna. That is the purpose to write Srimad Bhagavatam. Even though these things are very clearly mentioned in the beginning of Bhagavatam. But when it comes to the conclusion, one can go wrong. So I understood, okay, there is a need of philosophical basis to establish these facts, because people can misinterpret anything. So our intelligence is so swayed that one can get anything wrong. So that's why if you see here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 3rd canto, Sarga is given. The creation is described. How the Lord is creating. And in this particular stage, we can say that the Mahatattva is coming into existence after the agitation of Pradhan, by the glands of the Supreme Lord. The time energy is invested into the Pradhan, the original substance, which is undivided, which is homogeneous, and where the modes of material nature is not acting. So that subject is being, so that matter is being agitated by the glands of the Lord, and slowly the Mahatattva is emerging. So Mahatattva means there is modes are active. So what is the difference between Pradhan, which is the matter, and Mahatattva? In Pradhan, there are no modes are acting. Modes by nature, in Bhagavad Gita says, modes are acting. Sometimes goodness is prominent, sometimes ignorance is prominent, sometimes passion is prominent. However, in Pradhan, these three modes are in neutrality. The modes are not agitated. Now, when it is being agitated, then the Mahatattva manifests. So, well, there is time, there are cause and effect, there are modes of material nature. Active. You know, time is very important principle. Without time, there cannot be cause and effect. Can you understand? Without time, there cannot be any cause and effect. Right? To have a cause and an effect, there has to be time in between. Otherwise, how can you define cause and effect? If I had to slap someone, my slap is the cause, effect is some pain. There can be reaction immediately or later. But there has to be time between the slapping and the experience of pain. So for the cause and effect to exist, there has to be time factor. So that time factor is very fundamental, and that is invested by Krishna into Pradhan. And that's where the creation is starting. So here is the beginning of creation, where Mahatattva is manifesting, and here the material ego started to manifest, and it's all darkness because of dissolution, because there is no creation so far. So because the Mahatattva, as it is given, Mahatattva is in full effulgence, it's like a light coming up. Because of the effulgence of Mahatattva, that darkness is now going away. Because dissolution means it is completely dark, and this Mahatattva is lighting up, and it is actually covering those darkness, and then the creation will continue. So here we can understand one thing, that creation is not very simple. It is very sequential, it is very systematic, and it has a lot of transformation, and it is very complicated. When we say the Lord desired and then there has been creation, or if you say just by the desire of the Lord everything came into existence, which is a right statement, but that requires faith, full faith. Okay, let there be water, water was there, which is true, but here it is moving away from simple faith to some rationale. Can you see that? Here it is giving a process, how the transformations are taking place and how the material elements are coming into existence from energy. The transformation of the energy can be seen in the process of creation. So we are going through a particular stage where the Mahatattva is just coming into existence, and it's not like that. It's not. It takes time. It's a gradual process. Mahatattva will go through different stages. Mahatattva initially predominant in the mode of goodness. It further goes through Mahatattva predominantly in the mode of passion. Further it goes through Mahatattva predominantly in the mode of ignorance. So there is a transformation. There is effect of time. It's not just going to happen just like that. And then how the universes are coming out. So the whole thing is very complicated. It is very systematic. And at the same time, it is not the focus of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why even though it is given at few sections, this is not the focus of Srimad Bhagavatam. Focus of Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. That's why 90 chapters are dedicated in the 10th canto for Krishna's pastimes. And we can see pastimes of Krishna in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We can see the pastimes of Krishna in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we can see pastimes of Krishna in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, quite a number of chapters, quite elaborately, or a significant portion of 11th canto is pastime of Krishna. So we cannot just say that only 10th canto, or even though 10th canto has the prominence because it's completely dedicated for Krishna, but Krishna is present throughout Bhagavatam in terms of direct pastimes. Now, this gradual creation, the gradual process of creation also remind us of gradual development of bhakti in the heart of a devotee. So the attraction for Krishna, the development of bhakti and the development of chanting is a gradual process. It is not an overnight process. That's why Rupa Goswami says, Utsaham Nischayam Dhairyat. Correct? Utsaham, one need to be enthusiastic and one has to be determined, and importantly, one has to be patient enough. So with that, one can see how attraction for Krishna is increasing, how bhakti is developing, how anarthas are reducing. One can see. So this is the process. In fact, Rupa Goswami again further in Upadeshamrita says, Swadikramat bhavati tadgada moolahantri. One may wonder, you know, I'm chanting for such a long time. Where is the taste for me chanting? I hear the glories of the holy name. I hear the devotees who are describing the glories of chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But where am I? What's happening to me? So Rupa Goswami says, Kintu Adarat Anudinam Kalu Saiva Jashta. One has to chant Adarat. Adarat, one meaning of Adarat is one has to chant with respect. And Srila Prabhupada particularly translate Adarat as carefully. That respect is translated to care in chanting. Being very careful in chanting the holy name. Then he says, Kintu Adarat Anudinam Kalu Saiva Jashta. Anudinam, every day chant attentively, carefully Krishna's holy name. Then he says, Swadhi Kramad Bhavadi. Kramad means in due course of time, gradually. So even the creation, the process of creation is very gradual. It's not just happening, or, you know, it's taking millions of years, actually speaking. This we cannot even count how many years it took for the process of creation. So in the, we can see further, when Garbhodakshaya Vishnu enters into a universe, he lies, you know, he creates water and he lay down for millions of years. This is how the creation is taking place. So it is a very slow process. And we know about Brahma, how long he performed austerities, gradually. So even the process of creation is very gradual. The same way, we don't have to wait so much. This is talking about millions of years. But when it comes to bhakti, we don't need to wait for millions of years, because the bhakti process is very powerful. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, all of us serious students should go back to Godhead in one lifetime. This is the recommendation of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada, he also told, one who is serious, one lifetime. If you hear Srila Prabhupada's lecture, he says always, go back to Godhead. Right? It's meaning he wanted devotees to perfect in one lifetime. So, we need to apply the process very diligently and carefully so that we can see the result. That's why we chant the mantra, you know, Bahujanmagari, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Tabodana, Paya, Krishna, Pade, Premadhan. One Maharaj was giving a lecture, he was telling, if you want to take birth in ISKCON, every year, every lifetime you can. Because ISKCON is going to be there, or this process is going to be there for next 10,000 years, right? We can come back. We can have the same khichdi. Khichdi will be served. Still we can have the books are there. It will be there. So now it is our choice. So it's our choice whether we want to come back or we want to perfect. So if we want to perfect, we need to take it seriously. And indeed, one can see in one's life, we can see, we may not be able to see in a month's time, but if you practice for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, then we should be able to see a progression in our consciousness. It's not possible to see in 1 week, 2 weeks, few months. It's difficult. But as the years roll by, one should be able to see we are making progress. If not, we need to see where is it going wrong. It's nothing wrong with the process, but there can be problem with the application. Generally, that's the case. The problem with the application. We can see our chanting, our reading, our worshipping the deities. So we can see, we have to analyze where am I going wrong in terms of my practice. So when we understand the problem and accept the problem and we work on the problem, then we can see that there is a change. So we can see the process is very practical and it can be monitored. And there are gradations, even the path of bhakti in terms of progress. It's very systematic. That's why Rupa Goswami gives the systematic progression of devotional service classified into different stages, right? Starting from sadhu sangha, starting from shraddha, starting from a little bit of faith, then sadhu sangha, association of the devotees, then bhajana kriya, the regulated practice of devotional service, then anartha nirvritti, the unwanted things are removed from the heart, then nishtha, being steady in devotional service, then ruchi, one starts seeing taste in devotional service. So far everything was by force, now it is by taste. You know, there is a difference. Then one sees asakti. Asakti means strong attachment. Then from till there it is a kind of, the process is regulated devotional service. Then it comes to bhava, which is, bhava has to be awarded. It is beyond the realm of regulated devotional service. So that is bhava bhakti, which is one is full of spiritual emotions, where one understand one is not the material body, one understand one is spiritual being, completely realizes, and also one gets a glimpse of the Supreme Lord. Then finally, prema, which is the perfection. So, Rupa Goswami gives the different steps. At the same time, Jiva Goswami says, it is just an analysis. Which one? This steps of progression is only an analysis. Bhakti is so powerful that the Lord can give the higher attachments to the Lord even for a neophyte. So even though it is given, okay, it's a gradual progression, but it is not restricted in that way. So one can, even a neophyte, or after a few years of practice of devotional service, one can manifest a higher level of attachment for Krishna. That is also possible. That is also not excluded because of this classification. One doesn't have to, okay, you had to go through 12 years for anartha nirvritti. Where is that? No. One can develop the highest even in a few years of time. So this is bhakti. Process is very powerful, and that is the conclusion of all the Vedic literature. So we can appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam. We can appreciate this particular section of creation, and we can also see, we can appreciate this gradual progression of creation, and we can see the gradual progression in our own heart. So I stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes, bro. Yeah, so one need to think. The question is, if somebody is lacking patience, what to do? Say for example, if you are doing something and if you are getting impatient, just hold on. Don't give it up and don't do it as well. But think, why are you doing it? What is the purpose of, say for example, I'll give you a very classic example. Sometimes you take a purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, okay, and you start reading, you don't feel like finishing that purport. Have you ever happened like that? If you start reading something, yeah, it's a practical thing. You read a page of Bhagavad Gita, you start reading, it's just only a page, and how many seconds or maybe how many minutes will it take to finish one page? Maybe 1 minute, maybe. Or, you know, just reading, you know, maybe 2 minutes maximum. But read the first two sentences and then think, you know, oh, yeah, that's okay. You know, just leave it. This is called impatience. So if you feel like that, just be very practical, be analytical, use your intelligence. First, why am I reading? And how long it really takes to read this, as an example. And if I give that time, is it going to affect my whole schedule for the day by reading 1 minute, for example? No, it's not. Because we are driven to be impatient. It is very well manifested in this world. Channel browsing, if you are sitting in front of a TV, it doesn't have the patience, right? No. Channel browsing, you know, one channel for, you know, 2 minutes, don't know what's really going on, move to the next one, move to the next one. And browsing, if you're working or studying especially, one window will be open, one Firefox window will be open, then the second tab will be open, then the third will be open. Right? because he's impatient. You cannot focus on one thing, distracted completely. So the distraction is helping our impatience. Same with the mobile. You browse through Facebook. Have you seen this? This is the this is how we are reading Facebook. Just glancing it through. It's impatience. We don't want to better not to read, but I'm saying, you know, it's just that function of the mind is just manifested like this. So we have to stop. If that is happening, catch yourself. Why am I being impatient? What am I doing? What's the important? How long it takes to finish it? Why do we leave a couple of rounds for the night? Being impatient. Have you noticed that? Oh, just one round. Okay, I'll do it later. And then 10:30, I'm already tired. Oh, yeah. Oh, two rounds left. Being impatient. Just finish it. Finish it in the morning. Why to wait for? Anyway, it is the same time, same amount of time or more. If you chant in the night, it's going to take more time. Rather, finish it in the morning. You save time and it is done, you know. So we had to think, we had to stop and catch ourselves, catch our mind. It's an experience, understanding we are not the mind. We can make changes to the mind. So in that way we can see. Yeah, you had something.
Oh,
that is well beyond my capacity. Briefly, bhava is like a ray of the sun. So bhava is known as premankura. In this verse also the term ankura is used, right? What is that? Jagat ankuraha, the root of the cosmic manifestation. So ankura means a ray or a small portion, so, or the basis. So bhava is considered as premankura. It's just a ray of the sun of prema. So bhava to prema means I can explain. There is a very beautiful verse specifically on this in Krishna Karnamrita by Bilamangala Tagore. So this verse Srila Prabhupada quotes many often. Bhakti stoi bhagavati yadisyat kalena na bhavati divya kishora murti. So he says, bhakti stoi sthiratari. So there it is mentioned that sthiratara bhakti is referring to bhava bhakti. Sthiratara bhakti means, it can mean steady devotion, sthiratara bhakti. It's not just sthira, sthiratara. It's in a higher state of steady devotion, which is referring to bhava bhakti. So bhakti stoi sthiratara yadisyat. If somebody has that bhakti, bhava bhakti, kalena na bhavadi divya kishora murti. Then what happens? Kalena, just a matter of time. What will happen? Kalena na bhavati divya kishora murti. That is, then one can see Krishna as a kishora murti in his youthful form. One can see Krishna and one can serve Krishna in his youthful form, just a matter of time. Understand? So if one already have, one is fortunate to have bhava bhakti, doesn't have to worry too much. Just wait. That will become prema bhakti and one can see the kishora form of Krishna face to face and can serve Krishna in just a matter of time. So that is the first two lines of Bilamangala Thakur. Kalena na bhavadi divya kishora murti. Then he says, so this is on a very high platform. It's not really for us. Next lines are also very inspirational. Then he says, mukti swayam mukiladanchali sevatesman dharmartha kamagataya swamaya pratiksha. Then he says, mukti swayam mukiladanchali sevatesman. Then he says, okay, the mukti, people are after liberation from the material clutches, that mukti devi is mukilidanjali. Mukilidanjali means just like this. Sevatesman is ready to serve. How can I serve you? He's asking a pure devotee. Mukti devi is telling, how can I serve you? And what to speak about? Dharma, artha, kama and moksha. Dharma, the religiosity, wealth, sense gratification and moksha. Dharma, artha, kama, gadaya. They are samaya pratiksha. They are waiting. Samaya pratiksha. When can I serve you? So that is the high stage of bhakti. So this is the description of Bilamangala Thakur in terms of growth from bhava to prema. You can, if you want, you can share. Okay, sorry. Okay. one of you who were. Okay. Yeah.
In Vrindavan, they internally present in the spiritual world, right? And then the second question is, these pastimes, when Krishna appears on earth, he presents the same pastimes again and again. Is there a difference between the pastimes whenever he appears on the earth, or is it exactly the same?
Okay, the question is Krishna's pastimes present in the spiritual world? Second, the pastimes in the spiritual world and that in the material world, are they same or different? Or they are they repeats?
In the material world, the repeats, are they the same?
Okay. Krishna's pastimes are eternal and it's always present both in the material world and the spiritual world. So Krishna's pastimes are going on in the spiritual world without any break. So it is incessantly going on. And when you talk about pastimes in the earth, there are some pastimes in the spiritual world and in the material world are different. Say, Krishna never takes birth in the spiritual world. Because Krishna is there all the time. Where he has the birth pastimes are there. Krishna doesn't kill demons in the spiritual world. Because demons are not there in the spiritual world. He does kill demons in the material world. So there are differences between the pastimes of Krishna in the spiritual world and the material world. At the same time, if you consider the repetition of the pastimes. Pastimes, the presentation of pastimes, what we see in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's only a portion of it. It's not possible to describe the complete pastimes of Krishna because it is ever growing. So, pastimes, it's not just repeating as we think, because in our material consciousness, we think it is boring. Generally, this question comes because of one reason. If it's the same thing, you know, if I had to see the same thing, will it be boring? Similarly, one may also think, if I had to chant the same mantra every day, will it be boring? Right? Even we also can think sometimes. But that's not the reality. It's always ever fresh. So Krishna's pastime changes. It has variety and it changes. And at the same time, even if Krishna does the same activity, still it is ever fresh. Say for example, if you see someone for the first time after many years, what do you feel? You feel very attracted. You know, oh, after a long time, how are you? You know, there is an exchange. You know, you can see the eruption of emotions in the face, right? And in the heart. In the same way, any time one sees Krishna in the spiritual world, even though for eternity they are seeing Krishna, but when they see Krishna, it is just like they are seeing Krishna for the first time. So it is refreshed. Clear?
My question is in regards to Pradhan. I'm trying to understand it in a larger context. So you mentioned that Pradhan is when the three modes of nature are in equilibrium. But in relation to Prakriti and Purusha,
okay,
so I'm trying to understand the word Pradhan actually in relation to larger context.
Yeah, so the question is how to understand Pradhan in the context of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan.
And also Prakriti and Purusha.
And also Prakriti and Purusha.
Yeah.
So these things are actually explained in the previous purports. And if you start reading from 10th verse of this chapter onwards, you will get more understanding. So here, Pradhan is material. So if you consider the two aspects, Prakriti and Purusha, in a larger context, Purusha is referring to the Supreme Lord, the energetic. And Prakriti can refer to any of his energy in general. Okay, so everything is Krishna's Prakriti. Everything is Krishna's energies. So that energies are classified as Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti, right? One is Paraprakriti is his spiritual nature. The spiritual world, everything is part of his Paraprakriti. And Aparaprakriti is this material nature, not us, the material nature. The matter is his Aparaprakriti. Then, if you consider the living entities in itself, is also Prakriti. So that is Tatastha. It is marginal. It's Tatastha Shakti. So that is marginal energy. So we can broadly classify Krishna's energy as internal, external, and marginal. So Krishna has energy. So now, when you particularly talk about creation, creation is nothing but transformation of Krishna's external energy or Krishna's material energy in such a way that the marginal energy finds its residence in that material energy. So that is our body. Correct? So the Lord is involved, the Purusha is involved, that is his glands, and he is the providing the energy, and because of his energy, the marginal energies are finding our place in the material energy. So all three are involved. So now here, Pradhan is Krishna's material energy. Okay, now you refer to Brahman. Brahman is beyond the three modes. It's not three modes in equilibrium or in neutrality. Rather, it is beyond, because the Brahman is manifesting, it is completely spiritual and is manifesting the quality of Sat or eternality. So that is Brahman. Whereas Pradhan, all the three modes are there, but it's not active. So this is, Brahman is completely spiritual, whereas Pradhan is material.
Okay, so it's his material energy?
Yes.
But in equilibrium.
That's right. It's not manifested yet. It's not manifested yet. It's dormant. That's all.
It's dormant.
That's right, yeah. It's dormant. It's not yet active. So when the Lord activates, it becomes active and then the creation starts. So
it's a dormant state of his material energy in equilibrium.
That's right, yeah. Equilibrium in the sense, equilibrium of modes.
Three modes
of material nature, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Yes, transforms. Because the modes are, no modes are functioning. Say for us, we know how the modes are functioning in within us. Morning, if you sit, you feel peaceful. The same Bhagavatam class, 9 o'clock in the night, if we conduct, we know what happens. It's just the same person. We are the same person, but different modes are working on us. You know, morning itself, we struggle to wake ourselves up. But in the night, it's impossible. Right? Yeah, Pradhan
transforms.
Yeah, actively creating means Pradhan is an energy which is, three modes are not functioning. You first understand the modes, the competition of modes. Bhagavad Gita, read 14th chapter, you can read how the modes are competing to dominate, even within us. We want to sit peacefully and study. Suddenly mind will tell, no, do something else. Be active. So the different modes are working. Or feel sleepy. Can you see?
Yeah.
In goodness you want to read. In passion you want to run around and do something. And in ignorance one want to sleep. Correct? So modes are acting. So we can practically experience that. So now, in case of Pradhan, these modes are not acting. Even though they are present, they are not acting. In Mahatvata, as soon as the time energy is touching the Pradhan, immediately the agitation starts. So in Pradhan, there is no cause effect, there is no action, nothing is there. But now the activities are starting. So that's a gradual progression in which now Pradhan is transforming into Mahatvata. So the initial features of Mahatvata are being described in this verse. The time is the catalyst. And also the Lord gives the jivas also. Further we will see how, because finally the body has to be centered around the jivas. So jivas are also there in the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And linked to the same point, what is tattva? If someone were to ask you the question, what's the meaning of tattva?
Tattva means truth.
Truth.
Yeah, tattva means truth. So it can refer to philosophical truth. Say for example, Mahat, here Mahat means big. You know, literally Mahat means big. Tattva is the truth. It's a material truth. So Tattva literally means truth. Say Tattvavat as it is, you know. knowing Krishna as he is, that is tattvat, understanding he is as he is. So tattva in essence means philosophical truth. So we say jiva tattva is a truth. Jiva is a truth. You know, we are existing, you know, jiva tattva. We say Vishnu tattva, it's a truth. So we say Vishnu tattva, like that. Rasa tattva, about the mellow of devotion, so it's a truth. So tattva is a philosophical truth. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Tattvataha. Tattvataha means as he is. Yes, Mataji. Yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, so the question is, the primary question is, what happens to the soul, which is always meant to be active, in an inactive state of the body and the mind? So that can relate to the dreams or, you know, no dreams. So that's why the soul is an experiencer of four kinds of consciousnesses. Or in other words, the soul manifests four kinds of consciousness. So first one is called Jagrat, means wakefulness. So now we are experiencing, because we are wakeful, we can see things. Right? Hopefully. Then next state is Swapna. Swapna means dreaming. So then the soul is an experiencer of the dreams, which are the activation of the subtle body, different thoughts, because they are activated in the subtle body, in the mind. So a soul is an experiencer of the activities of the mind in the dream state. Then talking about the dream, dreams is not necessarily related to this lifetime. Bhagavatam actually explains dream. It can relate to previous lifetimes also, and Prabhupada gives the example that it can bring and it can combine different experiences and put together. Say, for example, Prabhupada gives the example of, there is, you have the experience of gold and you have the experience of mountain. You may dream a golden mountain. You don't have the experience of a golden mountain, but you can dream a golden mountain. Right? So that is about dream. Now, that is the second, so the soul can be the experience of the second, that is Swapna. So that is the second consciousness. And the third is Sushupti. Sushupti means deep sleep, where one is not experiencing anything, one is not aware of anything. And fourth is the real existence of soul, that is called Turiya, the fourth state. One is experiencing the transcendental reality, so that is the fourth state of the consciousness of the soul, so that is Turiya. So our aim is to come to Turiya consciousness or Krishna consciousness, coming to understand the reality. But soul is active in the sense, actually soul in one sense is dormant. Soul is not really active unless and until one comes to the spiritual platform. The experiencing the material world and trying to enjoy is not considered the activity of the soul. Soul is desiring though, but is not really active. The real activity of the soul starts only when one comes to the spiritual consciousness. When one has this, then we have the spiritual senses, we have the spiritual body, we have the, everything is there. So yeah, we have the spiritual mind. So when one comes to that platform, when one is active, then we can say actually the soul is active. Soul has all the capacity. Currently, soul is an experiencer. Soul is desiring. That's the activity of the soul. The activity of the soul at this point is desiring. And those desires are being fulfilled through the material body and mind. So the spiritual soul is desiring, and it is being the desires are being fulfilled through the material energy by the sanction of the Lord. So fulfillment of any material desire, the soul is involved, the material nature is involved, and the Supreme Lord is involved as well. So this is the general understanding of the whole realm. Yeah.
And so that's where a self-realized person will see
Yeah, so that's again a very, very good point. Action in inaction. Who sees, who does the action in inaction? Self-realized person? Sorry? Actually, it is said that that statement in Bhagavad Gita is action and inaction and inaction in action. Actually, for this is a comparison between a yogi who is meditating and a devotee. Say, a yogi, he may be renounced, he may not be doing anything, so but a devotee can see action in inaction. Even though he is not doing anything, still he is active because he is generating karma if he is not fully surrendered to Krishna in one sense. So that is action in inaction. But for a devotee, it is inaction in action. A devotee is running around doing all the services, but that is action, but at the same time it is inaction because it is not creating any karma, it is for the Lord. There is no reaction. So that is inaction in action. So for a devotee, it is always inaction in action. Like that. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.